Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Humans Access Manchester with me, Clint Boone. Every week we'll be celebrating the spirit of Manchester by speaking to somebody who's helped shape the city. This week I'm joined by Mancunian artist and illustrator Stan Chow. Stan tells us about perfecting his skill as an artist from a very early age.
This was over a period of time, you know. I mean, what I realised I was good at was doing portraits. I kind of felt like, you know, there's so many other good portrait artists and caricaturists that I didn't really push it until my dad bought me a computer.
And he'll also describe how his art angered the president.
And he just basically like, I can't believe the artist did this and they did, you know, there are some great pictures of me, but they chose this picture. The artist persuaded the New York Times to put this ridiculous cartoon of me.
Gives me great pleasure to introduce a young chap whose work as a designer and an illustrator has not only gained him recognition around the world, it's also earned him a Grammy nomination on the way and a scathing comment from Mr. Donald Trump as well. Stan Chow, welcome to Humans Access Manchester.
Hello, Clint.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. I probably went to bed a bit late last night, but yeah, I'm fine.
It's right, man. It's Manchester. That's what we're doing, isn't it? That's the way we do it here. There's a couple of firsts in that introduction, a couple of firsts for the podcast. Uh-huh. One being you are the first person that's ever been nominated for a Grammy.
That's nice.
Been on the podcast. And the other one is the first person who Donald Trump slagged off, which are both interesting stories. We'll come to those in a little bit. Let's start right at the beginning though, Stan. I know you're born in 1974. Uh-huh. Tell us about your childhood.
Well, I was born in Withenshaw Hospital. Let's get right to the beginning. Yeah. Born in Withenshaw Hospital. I kind of grew up in Altrincham, in the Chippy. Lived there for 7 years in Altrincham, and then my folks moved to Marple. And what I do remember growing up, I was the only Chinese kid in the school, and, you know, just because of the way Chinese families like to move, they like to be the only kind of family in the area, so not to create too much competition, really.
With the Chippy. For those people around the world that are thinking now, what the hell is a Chippy?
Yeah.
Because we know what it is in Britain. Tell us what a Chippy is.
Well, a Chippy is a place where we sell fish and chips, the staple diet for most people, like, back in the day. But we also, as well, sell fish and chips and pies, and stuff. We also had, like, you know, Chinese food in the back. So it was a Chinese takeaway and the front was like a chip shop, basically.
And that was the late 70s, you were growing up. Now, born in 74, so through the late 70s, early 80s, that's that was your childhood.
Yeah, yeah.
Your mum and dad emigrated to Britain from Hong Kong, is that
right? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my dad came over in the 50s. Back in those days, only men came over, you see. So every now and again, my dad would just hop on a plane back to Hong Kong, try and find a girlfriend, and then bring them back. And that's what they did back in the day, really. You know? So yeah, so my mum came over like early 70s. Then I was born.
Right. You know? I've got a question for you. Is that chippy still standing? The one that you grew
up? I believe it's a Indian takeaway now.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. It's on the same street as Altrincham Market. So every time I go to Altrincham Market, I get quite nostalgic, kind of remembering that I was born there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And what kind of a childhood did you have? Altrincham's always been a bit of an all right part of town, hasn't it, really?
It was great as far as I can remember, you know. I mean, like, all I did was kind of, you know, went to school, you know, watch me parents, like, run the chippy. I'll be in the back drawing pictures on chip paper and just stuff, you know, even experimenting with food. I'll be helping out, like, shelling prawns and chopping up mushrooms and stuff like that, you know. It was quite nice. And the thing I remember most, actually, we had loads of footballers coming in. And that kind of made me become a Man United fan. I don't know if we can talk about Man United, but yeah, I do remember people like Lou Macari and Gordon McQueen coming in.
Wow, proper legends. And, Lou Macari ended up with his own chippy, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
But is that inspired by you a lot?
I don't know, you know. I do remember when we drove past Lou Macari's chippy there, you know, but yeah, he got to know my dad quite well in the bookies.
Right.
You know.
And let's talk about schooling then. How did you get on at school?
You know what? I think I hated school. If I remember right, you may know. Like, I knew quite young that I was always going to draw pictures. So, and like, I was confident in myself that even from a young age that I'm going to be drawing pictures. You know, so in my head, I always felt I don't really need to try that hard at school because I'm good at drawing. But then when I came to secondary school, I got really into sport. So I ended up being in the rugby team and the basketball team and the athletics team. I was athletics captain, believe it or not. You know.
But you knew that art was going to be the thing from being a kid.
Oh, it was always going to be, yeah.
That's funny, that, isn't it? Because it's like, I think I dreamt of that kind of stuff. I never thought it'd be a career. But I think part of that was the careers teachers at school or the careers, whoever it was, the teacher that had that title, never told us about those options.
Right, you know,
it's always like, be a civil servant, go and build aircraft for Orca Siddeley, as it was called back then, British Aerospace. But you knew you wanted to be an artist.
Yeah.
And did you go on to art college?
Yeah, I went to art college. I mean, I applied for all the big places like Leeds and Kingston and... But then I didn't get in and ended up in a pretty crappy little place called Swindon, which was, you know, the course was actually quite good, actually. I had some really kind of reputable tutors, but it was just a bit small. Having lived round up here in Manchester, then going to, like, Swindon. I mean, the reason was I kind of chose Swindon was because it was near London. And I thought, okay, London is where it's all going to be all happening in terms of design. So let's go somewhere near London if I can't even get into London. But when I got down there, even back in the early 90s, it was £40 for a train ticket to get to London. I thought, God, this is wasting my time, kind of. Can't even afford to go into London. So I just spent 2 years twiddling my thumbs and just kind of did the course and basically came back up to Manchester as soon as I finished.
I don't suppose you were in Swindon when the Inspirals did that famous gig at the
Oasis
Leisure Centre.
I heard about it.
And that's where Noel got the idea to change the name of the band that he just joined to Oasis.
Oh, right, really? Okay.
That's where it happened, yeah.
Okay, I do remember the Oasis. I went there a couple of times.
It's a great gig as well. Good town. It's a good town. I only describe it as not the best place. Also, the band XTC came from Swindon. So one of the things I always loved about it. And you had there was an art teacher that you've mentioned in Dispatches that had a particular influence on you. Chap called Robin Hidden. Yep. Good name, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Was he hard to find?
Was he hard to find?
Yeah. Robin Hidden. Yeah. No, so because I that popped up on my radar when I read it because I had, there's a couple of key teachers that inspired me at school. Yeah. A lot of them I didn't really like, but we had an English teacher called Chris Giblin who was very inspirational. Yeah. Geography teacher, PK Murphy, brilliant. Uh-huh. And the art teacher, Pete Murphy, who was one of my favourite people of all time back then. And so you want to tell us about your art teacher, Robin?
Well, he was a fantasy artist. He was a fantasy art and a comic artist as well, but he didn't really kind of pursue it because, I don't know, it didn't work out for him anyway, but his work was amazing. He ended up being an art teacher at my school and he basically just took me under his wing, you know what I mean? And like, as well as kind of really rocking me when I needed to, he also encouraged me, you know. I mean, there were times when, even though I said before, like, you know, I always knew I wanted to be an artist, but there were times when that self-doubt does come in. The more you grow up, the more you think, is there actually any work available and how do you find work? He always just kind of believed in me and said, look, you know, if you do this and do that. He actually kept me, made me stay in education a bit for longer than I wanted to.
Okay.
I mean, I wanted to quit at 16, but he said, no, you've got to go through the education system. I mean, like, you'll learn more. You'll learn more about yourself, you know, more than anything else, as opposed to actually learning more about illustration and design. And once you've learned more about yourself, then it'll kind of be a springboard for you to be able to actually kind of like fight the world, really. You know, it'll just give you armor in dealing with the world, really.
And off to Swindon you went with your pencil case and watercolours under your arm.
Yeah.
What about music? Was music a big thing back in your youth?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, obviously started out like recording the chart show and stuff like that, but then got into Whitney quite early, and then but also got into metal. But basically, like, I was into soul and funk and Motown and heavy metal. Then, as I grew older, my music taste kind of went more eclectic, you know. I ended up DJing as well, like, which you probably know, because we DJed a few times back in the 90s, actually, wasn't it?
Back in the glory days.
I started out, like, just loving general pop music, but then it was Led Zeppelin that brought me into liking heavy metal, and then, obviously, you know, as you grow up, you just listen to more music, and I bought more records, and then ended up being a DJ for a few years.
And what about the first gigs you went to? What would they be?
Oh, the first gig I went to was, it was The Cult, actually, at the Apollo. It was on Children in Need night. I remember, I just remember the people collecting money for Children in Need on that evening, and Ian Astbury broken his arm the night before. So, yeah, that was the first gig I went to. Salt and Pepper was the second gig I went to, so
right,
gives you an idea of, I liked everything, really.
Yeah.
Apart from, actually, indie music. I never got into, like, the Smiths or the Stone Roses or anything like that. You mean, it was later on, going into my mid-20s and 30s, where I started to appreciate it a bit more. But back then, I was a bit of a... It was mainly more American-based music at the time, really, you know.
And what were aside from music, what about the other artists, like designers and illustrators that inspired you back then?
It was mainly just, like books, like children's books and picture books, really, you know, that, and comics, really. I mean, you know, there were two comic artists who really influenced me, Bill Sienkiewicz and Mike Mignola. Mike Mignola is the guy that invented Hellboy. These were also the guys that kind of helped make you think. They got a career in doing what they like, and they also did it in a way which was different from everyone else. They had a very distinct style, which was so different from your typical comic book illustration, really, you know, and that's what kind of drew me to them, really.
And that's what you've done. You've got such a... quite an original style that you've got, although people have tried replicating it. And I believe you said before, it's like the daily discussion they have to have with people on Twitter. But when did that style come about? When did you start doing the iconic sort of portrait stuff that you've known for?
I guess it was over a period of time, you know. I mean, what I realised I was good at was doing portraits. I kind of felt like, you know, there's so many other good portrait artists and caricaturists that I didn't really push it. Until my dad bought me a computer. Because before, when I started out, I was mainly painting, basically. And then he bought me a computer, and it was just trying to transfer my painting skills digitally. And I guess once you do that, you're already creating a new style anyway. But then it's a case of honing it and just massaging it and just kind of keep working on it and just letting it develop, really, you know. I never set out to kind of find a new distinctive style. It's just kind of the more you work, something just develops. And then if it's not working, you'll try something else to a point where, okay, I think I found a formula here, and it's working. And as well as it working for me, it's working for other people. Other people seem to be liking it as well. That's when you kind of know you've hit on something, I guess.
And do you still do the old like pen and paint? So
no, I'm not drawn. Well, I'm not painted for like 15 years now.
Right.
But I still do them every now and again. But the way I've kind of transferred all my skills working digitally, I just primarily work on a computer now.
Is it like an electronic whiteboard to start with? Do you use something like that, or do you just use a mouse?
I just use a mouse. And like, I learned on a mouse, and I just decided to stay on a mouse. I mean, I bought all the equipment to, like, a drawing tablet. It's just too hard to create my style. It's too much hard work just to try and, like, relearn again, really.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of my favourite quotes anybody's said on this podcast so far. Yeah. I learnt on a mouse, and I decided to stay on a mouse.
Yeah.
If you just heard that out of context, you're like, what's this? He must be really small, this guy.
Yeah.
And let's talk about White Stripes. At some point, Jack White became aware of your work, and that was a bit of a turning point, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was amazing. Well, the thing was, the White Stripes were playing a gig at the Apollo, and I thought, well, you know what? I think I want to start doing gig posters, you know. I was already doing a few posters for Night and Day and the Roadhouse at the time. And I thought, oh, I want my career to progress now. How do I get to do, like, posters for massive touring bands, you know? So I thought to myself, I'll just do a pretend bootleg post and see what happens. So I did a poster. I sent it to SJM to see what they think. They said, well, you know, we don't really deal with this kind of stuff, which is fair enough. And then I just put it on MySpace, which is, you know, all you could do back then. You know what I mean? It was like, I couldn't really print it off and sell the poster.
Mm.
So I put it on MySpace and just did a poster, like, to say, look, you know, this is my fan art poster for White Stripes playing at the Apollo. This is back in 2005. Just left it on there. Then some guy decided to take the artwork and put it on gigposters.com, which was like a website for budding gig poster artists. Jack White and Meg saw it on gigposters.com and gave me a phone call. It wasn't them, it was their manager or someone that represents them anyway. But, you know, it says, Jack and Meg have seen your poster and they would like to work with you. And that was that, really, you know. And I ended up designing these little hard drive sticks of, you know, little caricatures of Jack and Meg with their album Icky Thump installed in it.
Mm.
And apparently they made 333 of them each because Jack's obsessed with the number three. And that's it.
That's where the
Grammy nomination came, you know.
You got nominated for a Grammy for a thumb drive.
Yeah.
And at that time, this is a fascinating thing. I've never met Jack White, but I've met him briefly once at least. Yeah. Didn't really speak, but we passed. But at that time, he was married to a girl from Chadderton.
Yeah, yeah.
Karen Elson. Karen, she was a supermodel.
Yeah.
And I always thought at that point, this fact that he's called his album Icky Thump.
Yeah.
And there was a song called Rag and Bone.
Yeah.
And it really felt like to me, you just really embraced the olden spirit for that era.
Yeah.
So the Grammy nomination
was
a bit of an eye point in your career.
Yeah.
But tell us about this thing that Trump got involved in, because you did some art based around New York and Trump was made aware of it and described it as ridiculous.
Yeah, he did. This was before he was elected and the New York Times magazine asked me if I could draw a picture of Trump, stick the picture onto a balloon and the actual...
It's appropriate.
Yeah. And basically the actual cover was a photograph of the balloon with my picture on. So it became the cover of the New York Times magazine for that week. It won a few awards. But the day after, there was an interview with Trump in the Washington Post. And he just basically like, I can't believe the artist did this and they did, you know, there are some great pictures of me, but they chose this picture. The artist persuaded the New York Times to put this ridiculous cartoon of me. So yeah, that was a weird high point in my career.
You know, it would be, wouldn't it?
But you know, but the point was, what made that high point a low point was that he got bloody elected, didn't he? The whole point was, the idea was to kind of diss him enough so he didn't get elected.
The story's not over yet, is it? I'm sure there's going to be an happy ending, hopefully. Tell us about Lego. You do a lot of work with Lego still. Are you still doing that?
No. Basically, with Lego, they asked me to do some workshops and do some lectures for their staff.
So not necessarily designing for
them? I wasn't designing for them, no. Which was weird enough anyway. You know, it's like when I saw the email, I was like, is this a joke email? You want me to kind of talk to guys? You're Lego. I'm me. But I thought, yeah, I'll go. So I said, yeah. I said to them, I've never done a talk before. I've never done workshops before. But because it's you guys, I'll wing it. You know.
I had a meeting with Lego once. This just came to me that they came up with a concept for a kids' TV show, which was based around robots, and I can't remember the name of it. Might have been Little Robots. And I got called in as a musician that was doing theme tunes at the time. Right. I did Engie Benji and a few others for Granada. And I got this meeting with Lego down south. And I remember going into this Lego building and having to play this song that I'd written about a robot. And it was too raunchy. The song was really raunchy.
Was the lyrics or was it?
It's the full thing, but it wasn't. Right. But as I played it back, and I could see the woman's face dropping. I'm thinking, that's a bit suggestive, that second verse. So it never got used. Another big career moment, being a United fan since you were a toddler, you got to meet Alex Ferguson on business.
Tony Walsh, the poet, he asked me to illustrate his poem that he wrote for Alex Ferguson called The Govan Boy. It was commissioned by the Trafford Councils. They were opening Sir Alex Ferguson Way. So Tony did the poem. He wanted to make the poem look nicer. So I just did a portrait about Sir Alex, stuck the poem next to it. So we had this nice little package thing with the poem and my illustration. And the first time we met Alex was like, it was on his birthday. Like we were like surprise guests on his birthday to present him a signed picture of the poem. And that was like 4 years ago now. But then more recently, he just, out of the blue, he invited me and Tony to watch a game with him at Old Trafford. This was after his operation. And it was pretty amazing. Obviously, I was starstruck, you know. But then it wasn't just being starstruck. He comes up to me, like, we were hanging out with his family and his friends, and we were about to go onto the dinner table, and he puts his arm on my shoulder. Stan, you're sitting next to me. I was like, okay. So basically, I spent the whole afternoon just sat with him, chatting to him. Incredible. And it was bizarre but amazing. But he's so down to earth and he's such a gentleman, and he's still on it. You know, despite the operation, it was great company.
and it's still very well loved in the city, yeah. Not just by United fans, it's everybody, isn't it? Yeah. Of all the work you've done, what's the piece that you're most proud of or the most significant?
Everyone who asks me this, it's like, the problem is it changes, like, every time I'm asked. To be quite honest with you, the job I'm working on now, which I can't discuss, is probably the proudest job I'm working on.
Really?
But I can't talk about it.
Oof, you can really we guess?
No, you can't guess. You
is it to do with music?
Nothing to do with music.
Oh, is it to do with politics?
No. Oh,
is it to do with me? Just keep us posting on that one. So, Lego, White Stripes, Alex Ferguson, Donald Trump, anything else you've been working on that's weird and wonderful that we need to know about?
Also, did this thing for McDonald's a few years ago. It was designing their billboard on Piccadilly Circus. So essentially, it was an animated billboard. I created a little village. That was the illustration I created. But also, you could create these little people on your iPhone. Once you created a guy on your iPhone, you press jump. The guy would jump from your phone onto the big screen on Piccadilly Circus.
Amazing.
So you get all these dancing figures that the public have created dancing on the screen, basically.
That's incredible.
So there's stuff like, there's buses going around and stuff like that. But then,
has that got a name, or is it just part of the McDonald's campaign?
It was called Little Pika. It was up for like 3 or 4 years, but they only just took it down recently. But the best thing about that thing is it's also in the Paddington Bear movie. There's a scene where they kind of pan through London and my advert's there, that was done. But the thing was, it was like, I watched the film with my kids and they spotted it. And it's like, and they literally jumped up in the middle of the cinema. And like, Daddy, you did that. And it's like, I did. so for me, that was the proud moment. The fact that my kids saw it in Paddington Bear, as opposed to actually the job itself, really. But it's also been on other films like Mission Impossible. So the fact that I've done something and it's actually in another film and it'll always be there kind of somewhere, someone will always see it.
I had a moment like that when, I can't remember the film, I should know this. It was either Notting Hill or About a Boy.
Yeah.
And I think it was Notting Hill. But it's where the bloke, who's probably Hugh Grant, is he called?
Yeah.
Is that what he's called?
Yeah.
But he's in a record shop, and right next to him is Clint Boone Experience's second album, which is a picture of my little boy, Max, with his Mohican, when he was 5 or 6 years old.
Right.
And I should remember what the film is, shouldn't I? Especially if it's Notting Hill. I could probably put that on my CV.
It's Notting Hill.
Let's talk about Manchester. Let's talk about this beautiful city that we're that we've both grown up in and around. Do you think there is such a thing as a Manchester spirit? And if there is, how would you define it?
I'm sure there is. There's definitely an energy here. There's a kind of energy where you feel you can do anything. Well, that's how I felt anyway. When I first started coming into Manchester, I just met a bunch of people who just had this belief in themselves where we're going to be successful, really. And it's a case of just persevering. And the bunch of guys I hung out with back in the early days, like Badger John Boy and Andy Votel and the guys from Elbow and I'm Clute. This was before the time when anyone had record labels or anyone been heard of, and they just carried on doing what they love doing, really, And that, for me, is the spirit that kind of kept me going, really, because it was only about 10 years into my career, into doing illustration, where I could actually say, this is my job now, Before, I was just kind of like doing bits and bobs, working in the chippy, doing a bit of DJing, working behind bars, doing cloakrooms and stuff like that, just making enough money just so I could actually, be an illustrator. But the point was, I was still being an illustrator, you see. All the other guys were the same, They're doing all their little bits and bobs here, but they maintained their creative careers, and they just carried on and eventually it became a job. And I felt like, for me, that's the spirit I know, in terms of like, just we do what we have to do, but then we still do what we want to do. And hopefully that dream will come true,
But like I mentioned earlier, there's the one thing that's always struck me about the city, but particularly amongst the creatives, whether it's musicians or artists, or costume makers, whatever, they're always very supportive of each other. And that's, I've never really come across any rivalry as such, even in the bands, even when it was the height of the Manchester scene. The amount of camaraderie between those big players was amazing. And I think that is the spirit of the city. We're always there to help each other out if they need a bit of support and encouragement. Could you ever imagine not being in Manchester?
No, I have imagined quite a few times of not being in Manchester, but of all the places that I've tried maybe going to, always felt Manchester was where I was going to come back to, really, I guess it's where all my, it's where my family are, and my friends are. So ultimately, these are the things that kind of keep you where you are, really. I knew I could do what I wanted to do here in Manchester. If I felt like I had to go somewhere else to pursue my career, then I probably would have gone. But I didn't need to, so that's why I'm still here, really.
Tell us about your kids. How many kids you got?
I've got 2 kids, Winnie and Pearl. Winnie's 9, Pearl's 7. they're pretty cool, really. You know, Pearl, I think she's going to be great at something. She's just kind of, I've never met a girl who's so persistent at doing stuff. Then there's Winnie, who's just a bit more chilled and relaxed. She's just uber cool, you know.
And are they artistic?
Well, yeah, they are in different ways, though. Like Winnie just knows she's good. Then Pearl.
That's good like that.
Pearl, she's kind of like, wants to be better. That's the difference between the two, you mean it?
Yeah. What are your favourite places in the city? Where do you hang out? Where do you eat?
Oh, God.
Where do you take the kids?
Ooh, bloody hell. You're asking me a lot of questions here all at once. You know, where do I... Every now and again, I like to take my kids to go to eat dim sum. I feel like in Chinese, I really need to instill my half of their heritage. My wife being English and me being Chinese, is like every now and again, we have to go and have dim sum and eat Chinese food, you know. We normally go to Taipan on... Upper Brook Street,
near the hospital. Street.
Yeah, near the hospital. Yeah,
Lord, it's brilliant.
Yeah, you know, so we go there for us. It's the standard. It's the bar, really. You know, everywhere else we go, we judge it by the standard of Taipan. You know, so we go there quite frequently. A new place I like going to is this place called One Plus. It's a Chinese hot pot place where you get like raw food on a conveyor belt, and then as it comes along, you just pick your food and cook it in a stock pot in a cooker in front of you, and that's one of my favourite eating experiences. You know,
we go to Taipan, not just the restaurant, but underneath the ground floor is the big Chinese supermarket.
Oh yeah,
cash and carry.
Yeah,
we go there loads, probably every couple of weeks. The kids love it. We've got three little boys,
yeah,
and we have the Chinese hot pot at home.
Oh, right,
you have to divide into two. You have a spicy broth and milder broth.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
And you put the full Chinese experience. Yeah. My kids love it. They just so into the food. But yeah, Taipan, worth checking out. We're coming towards the end. I've got a couple more questions to ask for you. The first one being, who are your favourite humans of Excess Manchester?
Is Fergie included? Can I say Fergie?
Absolutely. I was hoping you would.
Oh, yeah.
They don't have to be born and bred Manchester.
Somebody
who's had an influence on the city.
Well, Fergie, you know, being a Man United fan and just bringing like 20-odd years of footballing success is just, I can't ask for more, really. I mean, you know, we've had recently some pretty dour times. Hopefully Ollie will make things a bit better. And he is making things a lot better. But
it's like a furry story, isn't it? The current chapter of Manchester United.
The longer Van Gaal and Mourinho are here, the more important Fergie became. It was kind of like you realised what an amazing job he did. So yeah, so a great bloke. Don't get me wrong, it's like the idea of hanging out with a 77-year-old dude doesn't really bring great joy, the idea of it, you know. But then but then it's like you hang out with him, it's like, whoa, he is cool, you know. Because he's not an old man, he's just a bloke. That's very interesting, and he's down with the kids. Well, I want to say down with the kids, but he has to be, because the guys that he was managing at the time were younger than I am, so he's got to kind of have a understanding of what people like 40 years younger than him felt, you know. In that sense, Fergie is definitely one of the dudes of Excess Manchester.
You mentioned before we started the tape recording, that you felt you should mention Anthony Wilson.
There's a small period of my career that we're not, like, I should talk about that. I managed a band, and without Anthony Wilson, I don't think I would have even strayed into that domain of managing bands. You know, he created a music scene which kind of made everyone feel like they could actually become a well-known band, you see. You know, during the kind of late 90s and the mid-90s, there was such a great scene where everyone felt, I'm going to form a band here and we could do all right here, you know. But even if they didn't do all right, that didn't matter. There was a music scene that he helped create, because he encouraged more and more young kids to be involved. It just made it better. And I feel that's how important he was to Manchester music in particular at the time.
There's one story about Anthony Wilson that is one of my favourites, and it just shows how, like we talked about, that support and encouragement for fellow Mancunians. Yeah. When the Inspirals were still relatively unknown, Anthony Wilson was at a party somewhere, and he bumped into our drummer, Craig Gill, who was with Noel Gallagher, who had just become our roadie at the time. They got talking, and Craig said, we're in a band, Inspiral Carpets. And Tony said, oh, I've got a TV show, if you want to come on and perform, get you in a couple of weeks, come and do one of his songs. This is before I had a record deal, and we'd never done telly. And then about a week after, our singer left. This is back in 1989. So we phoned Tony up and said, that TV show that we were going to film with you next week, we can't do it, our singer's left, we've not got a singer. And he said, just come and do it anyway, do an instrumental.
Right.
So we weren't even a complete band, we had no singer, but he still went and let us do the TV show The Other Side of Midnight. So the first time that we were ever on telly was an instrumental called Directing Traffic, because we had no singer. But it just shows how Tony was back then. Instead of saying, got no singer, we're not having you on.
Yeah, let's do it. No, he's very, very encouraging. Oh, there's another dude. I want kind of more Chinese dudes to represent. And he's called Benedict Wong. He's from Eccles. I don't think many people know he's from Manchester. But, you know, he kind of did the same path as me, really, kind of like working in bars and stuff like that in the Northern Quarter back in the early 90s. But, you know, he plays a big character. Wong in The Avengers plays opposite Benedict Cumberbatch in Doctor Strange, I think it is. And he's been in loads of films. He's been in The Martian. He's been in Prometheus. He's just one of those guys where not many people know he's from Manchester, but, you know, he's definitely still got Manchester in the blood. And he's a big Man United fan as well.
So he's a superhuman of XS Manchester.
He is, yeah.
That's another first. Final thing, Stan. Mm-hmm. Describe Manchester in 3 words.
Oh, my God. No, not oh, my God.
That'd work, wouldn't it? Oh, my God. Yeah. WTF.
Home sweet home. Beautiful. I think it is my home, really. I can't, as we touched on before, I've tried the idea of trying out other places to live in. But ultimately, you know, wherever I go, I'd always be drawn back here again.
Yeah, home sweet home it is for all of us. Stan Chow, thank you for being a human of XS Manchester.
Thank you very much, Clint.
That was Stan Chow. Make sure you join us next week where I'll be speaking to legendary DJ Graham Park. Don't forget to follow us on social media. We are at Humans XS and subscribe to Humans XS Manchester. Rate us. Feel free to leave us a comment as well. We'd like to get your feedback. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.